I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Good morning, Austin, Texas, and welcome to B&E. It is Thursday, Buck Ons, Buck Offs. Monty Williams joining me this morning. And, of course, you. And we do appreciate your text messages and your phone calls. You can always text us at 512-337-3776 on the Specs text line. And, of course, calls. It all depends on how you guys treat Ty. I mean, if he thinks you've got a good call, he'll take a call at 512-447-3776. But he does screen the calls. You will have to – you can't just jump on and start – rambling away like you like to ramble on the text line. Ty will like to know what you want to talk about.
Ty's a pretty judicious gatekeeper.
No, he is pretty good at that.
I try to be. It's hard sometimes with our listeners.
Yeah, well, he has to hold the fort down with us when we do this part. So,
well, you know, my
there's certain things you can't control, and there's others that you can control. He can control that. What he can't control is the madness that starts in here.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that's hard to do. And then the texters always seem to want to control what's in here, and they have no chance.
I'll tell you, the texters, though, if you got a question, you know, I mean, it's
oh yeah,
it's quite a good research tool.
No,
the texters will find the answer.
No, I've loved it for over 20 years. I love each and every one of them to a degree, and then I just stop loving. You know what I mean?
Well, my guy CB, he helps me out every morning.
Oh, CB is like fabulous. Google.
Anything I miss or E. Hogan misses, he's tagging us in it instantly, letting us know. So I appreciate it, CB, up there in Washington, right?
The Great Northwest.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a gatekeeper. I got one at the house.
Ah,
yeah, and believe me, it's doing a fantastic job each and every day. Not an opportunity to miss by the gatekeeper. You know what I mean? Not an opportunity. If there's an opportunity there, the gatekeeper will be there to keep me in line. Monty, talking as we're talking about buck ons, buck offs, and, you know, as I said, Cowboys fans will continue to buck off Dak Prescott. But the main focus ought to be the guy who's made himself general manager, president, coach, and the whole works. That there's going to have to be changes. If you're not changing out your quarterback, which everybody wants to do, which I'm like, well, what the hell are you going to do?
No, they're.
Are you just going to trade straight up for somebody? You're not going to give up. You're going to give up something if you decide to get rid of Dak Prescott. And Cowboys fans, what else do we have to trade? Now the whole Zeke Elliott thing, it's time for that.
Oh no,
to stop.
You got to shed salary cap. I mean, I'd move Zeke. I would definitely move Zeke, and we said this last hour. I'd definitely draft Bijan if he's available. I don't think at 26 he's going
to
be around.
Well, I mean, bad news for Zeke is the Cowboys decided not to retain Skip Pete, their running back coach.
Really, he's gone now?
Yes.
He's been there for a long, long time.
Two different stints there, and he's one of Ezekiel Elliott's guys.
Absolutely.
So that's not a
– That would be Rodney Pete's dad.
Was he Rodney coaches Pete, as well?
No, Rodney Pete played quarterback at USC.
USC?
Yeah. Rodney Pete. I think Rodney played in the NFL for a while, too.
But yeah, not very long, but I sure remember him at SC.
Yeah, his dad been the running back coach there. As you said, Ty, he's been there and gone and come back again. Pretty good doggone football coach.
Did I see that – was it Charles Davis died? Speaking of USC, about a week or two ago, the running back?
That probably about a month and a half. Yeah.
Well, was that long ago?
Yes. Absolutely. One of my all-time great Trojans. As a matter of fact, I loved running back.
Kind of a star-crossed position, really. Running back at USC. You got, you know, OJ. That didn't turn out well. Charles Davis passed. Ricky Bell. Absolutely. Ricky Bell died. Some gosh, like in his late 20s. Mike.
The whole gang. There were some great running backs came out of USC.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For, just like Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, to me, I don't think this is hyperbole. To me, Bijan Robinson is there with the true greats. He is there with Campbell and Ricky Williams, said Benson. I think that combination of speed, elusiveness, strength after the, I mean, like his yards after contact are phenomenal for a kid that size. He's not a, you know, I mean, he's not a monster back at all.
But he's 2 1/4. He's 220.
Is he 220?
Yeah. Every time I look at him, because he's not that tall, but he's stout. He's stout. He's built all over the place. He's, you know, like Priest Holmes was built. I mean, he was not 220. He was more like, you know, 210. Mm-hmm. He was never 215, 220. This guy's almost 225. I mean, he's thick.
I didn't know he weighed.
And he
that
carries
much,
that really, really well. And he moves really well with that kind of weight.
He's very physical, but he can also avoid contact very well. And he's very good at getting tackled. So that, I mean, that's one of the biggest things for me, because longevity at the running back position. If you can, Zeke Elliott, he's good at that too. You know, kind of spinning out of like a guy coming in, hitting, knowing when to get down. But he also knows when to fight for extra yards.
And his ability to absolutely make you miss for a big guy. That's a big. If you're 220 something, making guys miss, I mean, in tight quarters, that's hard to do. And he does that really, really well. He's got great feet inside the tackles.
Sure. And the moment your skills erode to the point where you can't make them in, which is where Zeke Elliott is now.
I think that's exactly
where
he is.
I mean, he's not making people miss anymore. When Pollard went out last weekend and they brought in Zeke and he was trying to get a first down, I think it was a third down call.
Where he reached across.
He didn't. He almost defeated a tackler entirely, but just couldn't quite get away from him. He did make enough yardage that then it was a fourth and one. They went for it and got it. But the Zeke Elliott of 4 years ago would have never been touched.
Yeah, and there was a few plays in that game too where when Pollard was out and the Cowboys offensive line did create a lane for him to rush, and there's all he has to do is beat that first arm tackler going out his legs, and back in the day, I mean, he would jump over that guy, he'd fight through that tackle, and any little bit of contact on him now, he'll jump forward and get a few yards, but those used to be 25, 30 yard, runs, if not a house call. And we never see that anymore.
That's right.
The guy, he didn't rush over 85 yards this entire year.
Somebody corrected me. Skip Pete is Rodney's brother. Not Skip, is a little bit older than I. He's his older brother. How's that? That'll work. If he's not his dad, is his older brother. I'll say that. Yeah. When you look at Zeke now, I mean, he just doesn't have. You know, I thought Cedric Benson could have had a bigger college career if he didn't. He tripped himself a lot. He got a lot early in his career. There were a lot of low leg tackles with him because he didn't lift his legs. He wasn't that runner who lifted his legs when he ran.
Yeah.
He kind of skimmed across the turf at that time. And so he had a lot of what I call stumble bum plays where you'd hit your toe into the turf and go down, or somebody would get that on your ankle and you'd go down because you never really got your legs up. I'm not saying everybody had to run like Roger Craig. That's hard to do. Roger Craig, the way he ran for San Fran, that's a hard style.
In the chin with his knees.
Yeah, and there are a lot of young backs that have that when they first come into college football where their legs just don't. They're used to, if you stick your arm out there, they'll go through it. But Cedric had some really rough times where he would stub that foot into the ground and he'd lose his balance and go down, and you'd look and go, damn, that was a big play ready to be had. And Zeke, over the last couple of years, you saw plays that were ready to be had.
Yeah.
But somebody would stick an arm out there and you're going, the old Zeke or somebody a little bit different. That's where Bijan, I don't see him tripping himself that much. He never came into Texas as one of those guys. He was breaking arm tackles immediately. And if you didn't wrap him, he was going through that. If you hit him in the shin or in the thigh area, you're probably going to break your wrist or break your arm when you do that with Bijan.
Oh, he has. I mean, he has ballerina qualities.
Yes.
You know, the balance he has is ridiculous. You've seen a lot of him falling forward. Even you know, it looks like no way he can stay up.
He doesn't lose yards.
He'll take a guy will bounce off of him and he'll just keep going. I've you know, at Texas, the only other running back that I think that's similar to him, and I know it's not the same body type, but Jamal Charles, you know, just the ability to stay up and find the hole. Like, he's not a Deonta Foreman. He's not like anyone.
Those are big men.
Or Cedric Benson, right, or Ricky Williams. I think he's more, it's a new age kind of running back or runner.
Well, one thing that makes him new age is those hands. I mean, he's such a great receiver.
Oh, him coming out of the backfield running those angle routes.
Yeah, I just
saw enough of it.
I think he's going to be gone between the 10th and 20th pick.
Well, if he's there where the Philadelphia Eagles get a chance to pick, you know, they like Sanders. He's now started to come through a little bit, but they're not the same kind of back. I can't even imagine this guy with Smith.
Well, you just get
Smith,
such value out of these
AJ
guys.
AJ Brown.
You get value out of these guys so much on their first go around. I mean, Burroughs is still on a rookie contract.
Yes.
Think of the money that the Bengals are saving, and think of how much value they're getting from Joe Burroughs on that first contract, which will never happen again.
Well, three out of the four quarterbacks left are still in the rookie deals.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
Patrick Mahomes is the only one that's the window. You got to win in those first 4 to 5 years where you're not having to pay your quarterback $49 million like the Cowboys are next year. Yeah.
And they're going to pay Joe Burrow then. Get ready, because that stuff is going to start. They've got to start that. They've got to start thinking about Jalen Hurts. As much as you don't want to think about it and you're talking about rookie, you know, signings, you have to start doing that 2 years ahead of time. Are you going
to
do it? You can't.
Well,
you
have
won't
to.
Be any Lamar Jackson kind of
it.
Things here where you go down to the wire. That stuff will be over with in Philadelphia. And in Cincinnati. That'll be over with in a hurry. That won't be drama there, I don't believe.
Well, Cincinnati is just legendarily tight-fisted.
Oh, yeah, they are.
I mean, legendarily
the
tight-fisted. But I do think that when you're talking about, so when we were talking during the break, I mean, you got the Heisman Trophy winner and national championship winner that's now looking at maybe winning his second Super Bowl in his, what, third year?
Well, winning his first, but being in it.
No. I'm talking about Burrow.
Oh, yeah, being in a second.
It would be his second Super Bowl win.
Or first.
It'll be a first.
Oh,
he didn't win.
They lost.
That's right.
That's right. Oh, God.
But he'll be entering the possibilities of entering his second,
yeah,
winning a national championship and a Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
How many guys have done that? Won a national championship and a Super Bowl? I'll have to look that up.
No, Patrick Mahomes did not do that.
Who comes? Does anyone come to mind, though?
Who? No.
I can't think of anybody. Did Joe Montana win a national championship?
No.
Not in Notre Dame, no.
They kept Texas from winning it. Or no, Houston. No. No, I'm wrong.
I'll do some research.
I'm wrong about that. But nobody comes to mind as winning the Heisman, a college national championship, and then a Super Bowl.
Well, the fact that none of us can think of it, and if Joe Burrow does it, that sends him to an all-time great.
That yeah. It does.
And I'm saying the lead will still be, because horse racing is the easiest sports story there is to cover, is that Joe Burrow will have beaten Mahomes four times. That'll be your lead.
No matter what it is.
If the Bengals win, you know, it'll be, you know. That will be
two quarterbacks
that will be your lead.
Have ever claimed both a college football and national championship or college football national title and the Super Bowl. Joe Namath and Joe Montana.
The Alabama won the national championship when Namath was there? I didn't know that.
That's what this is saying.
Wow.
But nobody's done the Heisman. All three, right? You say all three?
I didn't say all three to start, but I can look that up too.
I don't think that's a no.
Well, Namath didn't win the Heisman.
Uh-uh.
So Joe Burrow would be, well, did Joe Montana win the Heisman?
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
I don't think so.
No, sir. For the game, you know, Ty, we were talking about that this 49ers game. The Cowboys got enough pressure on Brock Purdy last week. They got in his face a few times. He's not dropping back five steps against Philadelphia, I don't believe. I mean, there's some things that he'll have to do, I think, to win this game. And if he was under pressure last week, I think he'll be under more pressure this week.
Well,
obviously, yeah. as it goes on, you're going to play this defense of Philadelphia now. I mean, they led all of football in sacks. So he doesn't get a chance to – if he got pressured last week, I think he really gets pressured this week. And he's going to have to do – the slant route is not going to be the only thing he's going to get away with. They're not letting him get – plus, they're going to clamp down on Kittle. As much as you – George Kittle is going to not – have free reign to run all over the place like he did last week.
I just have to believe that they're, you know, that every game Purdy plays, he must reveal some weakness somewhere. And the more film you get on the guy and the more snaps that you see him take, the more likely you are to scheme right into his weaknesses.
And why can't that work the other way, where he just gets better the more he plays in the NFL, the more games he plays at that level?
I mean, it can, but every player has a weakness, and that weakness he hasn't had enough time to work out his weaknesses.
Yeah, did you say he had to do a lot last week to beat the Dallas Cowboys?
No. I mean, that the defense kept him in check for as long as they could. That last drive where it was like the 9-minute drive where they ran it down and ran all the clock out. At that point, the Cowboys defense had probably done all they could do. Mm-hmm. You know, what was the final score? They held them to 19 points?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't.
What else can you do?
You
can't
ask for more than that from your defense.
I would agree. What else can you do? You're right.
But Brock Purdy didn't do anything to beat them, I don't think. You know, like, he didn't. They could have easily lost that game. You know, Dak had to go win it. That was the difference.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy never was in a position where he had to go win the game.
Yeah, he did make some nice throws.
And he hasn't been in that position since he's been the starting quarterback.
That's true. Just had to win.
So that's what I was saying. Like, going into last week's game, I thought the best shot they had was, you know, going into the fourth quarter with a 6-7 point lead and making Brock Purdy go down there.
They should have won. I mean, the Cowboys, they should have won that game. They had it. They absolutely had that game.
And why is it that, you know, these Joe Montana types and Brock Purdy doesn't get the ball batted down. That surprises me. He's not, what is he, 6'1" maybe? He's not a 6'3" guy. He's a 6'2". Fake 6'2". Is he a fake 6'2" guy?
He just looks young and skinny. Like, I think he's a little bit taller than we give him credit for. I think he's probably a little bit shorter than Dak, if not the same size.
Got a nice throwing motion at every angle.
Yeah, no.
Because they don't block passes. He doesn't get passes knocked down. That's what surprises me more than anything. He doesn't have to set in the pocket. They don't drop him back anything but maybe 5-step. He doesn't get back to a 7-step drop where guys can jump up and knock the ball down. And if they do get opportunities, he's got a nice arm angle. He throws the ball. He's got pretty good strength.
Yeah, I don't know whether getting the ball knocked down by a defensive lineman is a function of the quarterback not getting enough air, you know, not throwing it over, or whether it's, you know, the fact that I'm reading my receivers and where they are, and I turn. I think linemen are jumping a lot more, trying to block a lot more passes.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're more athletic.
There's some linemen that they realize they're never going to get home on the pass rush,
yeah.
So they just, you know, you see J.J. Watt
like a rebound.
Saw J.J. Watt do it a lot, you know, over his whole career, but, you know, especially later in his career, he was so good at, you know, stopping in the middle of the pass rush, realizing that he wasn't going to get home and just waiting and
just almost hiding behind the offense
volleyball setting that the ball. And I think that's huge.
Well, we know Christian McCaffrey is going to be banged up. That's a day-to-day thing. He didn't practice yesterday. Their other running back didn't practice either.
Elijah Mitchell.
Both of them were out.
Charles Minnehue practiced, though.
He's practicing that. They're waiting. That's going to be all about the NFL. That's Roger Goodell from this point on, it sounds like. Or the authorities that are saying.
I mean, do you think that's – I don't see a – I see an issue with him playing, but letting the legal process play out is probably the best.
Yeah,
you don't want to ruin
Kyle
a guy's –
said that's what we're doing.
Yeah, you don't want to ruin a guy's
We're not jumping
life.
To any conclusions
now.
We're playing business as usual for us right now until something else happens, whether it's the NFL or whether it's the authorities. But as of now, he's a member of the team. He's practicing. He's doing all the things that he needs to do. Let's take a quick break, come back, talk some more playoff football when we return. It's B&E, Buck Ons and Buck Offs.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Welcome back to B&E. Monty Williams has joined me this morning. I love it. Ty doing his thing, you doing your thing. Specs text line, of course. And if you do want to hit Ty with a phone call, you may do so. 512-447-3776 is Monty and I, of course, we go through some old man radio. Of course, we do talk sports, too. And I was just – someone asked me the other day, who is the best pass-catching running back that I had? And obviously, they didn't mean forever. They meant when I was at Texas, not at Boston College or Illinois, because my Boston College running back was fantastic. A kid named Troy Stafford that left Boston College. It was a rookie of the year for the Miami Dolphins when he was at BC. But when I got here, I mean, Ricky could catch the ball. Kid named Sean Mitchell was fantastic because he actually was a wide receiver playing running back. I mean, he had that type of body. I'm not including Wayne McGarrity because he ended up being a pretty good wide
receiver
for the Cowboys. I mean, But there's a kid named Phil Brown when I got to Texas.
Sure.
Little fullback, half halfback, that had fantastic hands coming out of the backfield. And he would catch them all. And his ability, you know, we ran a lot of with John McAfee, we ran a lot of options where we'd slide the back out of the backfield, like they do in the NFL. I mean, this was an NFL offense where you'd go one-on-one with the linebacker and you would force pressure on linebackers, inside linebackers, to cover backs from the running back position, not in a slot, you know, not in motion, but coming out of the backfield. I mean, which was kind of archaic that we did back in those days in the 90s. You know, we very seldom stuck a guy in a slot and had three wides. We made you come out of the backfield. We made you check your linebacker and then go when there wasn't a blitz. But he would abuse linebackers one-on-one. Now, Ricky had great hands, but Phil Brown was fantastic at option routes. You know what? If the linebacker overplayed you, you just slide inside. If he underplayed you, you slide outside. He was fabulous at that. So he was the best. Now, some of the guys that will listen to the show, like Butch Haddon, would probably say, no, it was me. No, Butch, no. You had hands like
Butch
feet.
Haddon.
You had hands like feet. A number of you had hands.
Did
just
Howard
like,
Griffith
had? Howard had really, really nice hands, too.
Did he have
too.
Good hands?
He ran really nice option routes. He was the out-and-up guy, out of the backfield, slide it up the sideline.
Typically, running backs who have great hands play a lot of basketball. You know, that's just
oh, yeah.
That's how they develop those hands. You know, it is funny you talk about putting running backs in the slot, using them as receivers, putting them out on pass patterns. It's not just simply a screen or a decoy or something like that. I'll tell you, I think Bijan 1 year in the NFL, he's mm-hmm. better than Christian McCaffrey. That's
really?
What I think. I believe so.
It's a lot of statement right there.
I know, but they're kind of similar.
Yeah.
They're kind of similar players when you think about it.
Their ability to make you miss body types every year, right?
They make you miss. They can also, you know, I think Bijan may be a little stronger, but they're both good receivers.
And their dead-up speed is incredible. Christian McCaffrey's speed is unbelievable.
Oh, he's a burner. Yeah. He's a complete burner. And he can run deep routes. Mm-hmm. Running backs on deep routes, I think, is something you'll continue to see a lot more of. You know what? I always thought that where this whole thing is headed, you know, everybody kind of describes about how now football seems to be a little bit more like basketball. The fact that they, you know, you're protecting the head more and quarterbacks can't be touched.
Sure.
And there's, you know, there's more razzle. You've got more receivers out and everything. I do believe there will be a day where you've got two people can throw the ball. On your offense at all time. You're not
your running
just,
back slash
you've got,
quarterback.
You've got a quarterback, but I've got somebody else who can come in out of a different formation, come right in, catch the snap, and throw a pass with my quarterback out as a receiver himself.
A la Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. I just think that's the way things are going. And I think ultimately 5-10 years from now, you're going to see these offenses that are truly high-powered in that they've got two people who can sling the ball.
Oof.
On the field at the same time, they can throw the ball and catch the ball.
Whether they're in a slot, quick screens that get thrown down the field, reverses that get thrown down the field.
You know, I shift out a quarterback A and move quarterback A out to the slot and bring in slot receiver to be quarterback B, run the play. Those defenses would be back on their heels wondering what to do.
Or getting that way.
Yeah.
It's making it tougher on the defense. I mean, we're changing the game as it is, so offensive-oriented. They want scores.
Oh, yeah.
They want points.
You know, you look at all these old-time quarterbacks that were mobile at the time. The hits they took, like a guy, this is old man radio time.
Old man radio
for old
time.
Man radio
we
now.
Old we got to have an old man radio theme.
Old sound man radio.
We should be doing Wolfman Jack sounds in
yeah.
the background.
Like Fran Tarkenton. Fran Tarkenton was an incredibly mobile quarterback for his day. You were a big Vikings fan.
I was, yes. Yes, love Fran Tarkenton.
He took so much punishment. He just got the living crap knocked out of him for about a
decade. But
you know
who got more punishment that couldn't run around? Roman Gabriel.
Oh, well, yeah.
The big Roman take a
– Yeah.
Those guys took some massive –
Yeah, and Joe Capp.
Joe Capp. Joe Capp wanted – but Joe Capp wanted the contact.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Yeah, there were certain guys that – Ty wanted contact. They weren't. It wasn't their ability to throw. It's their ability to punish secondary guys and linebackers just to show you how tough they were at the quarterback position.
But I just wonder what Fran Tarkenton, if he were a 23-year-old today, and with the rules protecting quarterbacks,
sure,
and his ability to slide. You slide like that in 1968.
Somebody's sliding right with you.
Somebody come right down and hit you right between your, you know.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
They're right between they're trying to protect their. It's not just protect the player. They're trying to protect their game.
It's the game. It is the game, and I mean, I fully support it. And you know, I mean, the game's sustainability is in doubt. I just don't think there's any way around the fact that there's this kind of lull while everybody waits for there to be a test developed whether you can detect CTE in living people. Now, the only way you can determine whether or not a player has had CTE is an autopsy. They have to have passed away.
Right. This is the game of football. What they don't want is that it had nothing to do with contact a couple of weeks ago with the kid with his heart. Football doesn't want to have that on live TV. They don't want once a week to see that. And they don't want to definitely not see it in a collision.
Well, the thing is that there, you know, I think a lot of people focus on these giant, massive blow-up collisions, but the blow to the head on every play, on every down, especially the linemen that suffer that, the moment you have a test on a living human to determine whether or not there's any brain damage that's currently being done, CTE, and it turns up that that's true in high school players, the game's over as it stands
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I just don't.
There's just, you're going to have to wear big, you know, you're going to have to wear those big eggshell rubber things.
Do they do it some
practice?
They
may even remove the face mask. The thing is, no school board will allow it. No insurance company would cover it. Once they determine, and I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion because it may be that it's much more of a rare phenomenon and it wouldn't, but I just feel like we're kind of in this area where we're about to find out that it may not be the sustainable game we think it is once the medicine can catch up analytical medicine.
Well, they can continue to coach it. They can continue to coach it in certain ways.
And make equipment better.
Let me just say this, and make equipment better. But the head in the game, the head is going to be a part of the game in football. You can do everything you want. You can teach it over and over again. And I'm not saying don't teach it. Just have the player figure it out himself. Keep your head out of it. If there was no face mask, you wouldn't stick your face in there. Yeah, they would. Yeah,
sure. If y'all had to guess what the sport was with the highest concussion rate.
Soccer.
Women's soccer.
I know. Believe me, I know it. I've been around enough concussions and knee injuries and girls
destroying their knees. But a concussion is different than CTE. I mean, to be fair,
you have to have a repeated.
Two different things.
That's my question. I don't know if y'all aren't doctors, so you might not know this, but does it take like
a certain amount of hits or
like over a 10-year span?
Well, I just think it's a certain force
on impact.
It's your melon. Everybody's head is
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know what a baseline human is in that regard, and whether or not neck strength, you know, mitigates. They're just nobody knows, but I do know that lots of different researchers are racing to come up with a test that you can determine whether or not CTE currently
exists. Sort of like they do
exists.
for young kids that go and play football, and they have those heart checks before they go out.
Yeah.
And you know, they get their heart monitored before they even go play football.
Yeah, but in a lot of these programs, and individuals, their parents can't afford to have, like, a brain scan.
Well, if you want to keep your game going, they eventually will. It'll get to that way somehow.
Well, you're going to have some baseline. I mean, you know, you go to school A and say, is there a doctor in the house? And there are going to be 15 cardiologists in the stands. I won't mention any high school names, Ty. But if you go to high school B and say, is there a doctor in the stands, you might not find one. And just the haves and haves not in high school. I didn't really realize until my son played high school football, just how different that's when it really, you think college is haves and have nots. It's really haves and have nots.
Yeah, soccer is soccer for young girls. I mean, that thing can be devastating. My two daughters and my son over the course of, I got to think over the course of the 10 years that they're really heavily involved. I mean, heavy duty.
Yeah.
You know, league play, college play. There's 13 surgeries between my three kids.
Really?
13 surgeries. My daughter had a broken back from playing soccer.
I never had one, like, besides breaking a bone, like any kind of reconstructive surgery of any kind playing football. And I played from first grade to when I was 18 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, but soccer, you're going to get them.
I know. Just the.
I hate to say this, but young ladies fall a little different at times. They're built a little different, and ACLs and things like that.
Oh, I saw one of the biggest hits I've ever seen live in my life in a girls' high school soccer game.
Really?
Just like clotheslined, head hits the ground, out cold.
Yeah, I was at a game where they brought the ambulance on the field for my daughter, onto the field.
What? She
for a knee.
A knee?
At Texas. Her knee was turned backwards.
Is that just because they're planting more and harder certain ways? Or?
Just give certain ways, I guess. I don't know. I just know that thank goodness the insurance was great for me at that time. 13 surgeries.
That's a ton. I never had any surgery. I didn't go out until my junior year in high school. I didn't want to march with a tuba, and the only way I could get out of that was to go out for football. So I went out for football.
My dad did both while he was at Westlake.
Oh, yeah? He went out at halftime.
At the beginning of halftime, he'd come out, be in the marching band.
Yeah, I went through high school football with a dislocated shoulder that had to have surgery. And other than a dislocated shoulder and bum fingers from playing a wide receiver and defensive back, the only other thing I had a hairline fracture in an ankle. I had that whole Patrick Mahomes of what Pollard's going through. And hairline fracture, that probably back then they would have called now they call it a high ankle sprain, but that it has that little teeny fracture in it.
Yeah.
But now to Tony Pollard, did we find out he got surgery?
Yes. He's out of surgery. It went well. So
if it ended up being, if it was just a hairline fracture, that would have been probably a month deal, month to 6 weeks. He's ready to start getting back there and rehab. But this is surgery.
I mean, I think they'll take it slower.
Sure. I mean, there's no reason to get out there now.
Is the surgery with a hairline fracture to put a screw or a plate in it?
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, usually when I hear hairline fracture, that's just like a crack. So
yeah.
I'm sure they're taking some precaution with putting something in there, but I don't think if it was one of us three that had that injury, I think
we would know. We'd just go on.
Yeah.
We'd go on with
yeah.
life.
Oh yeah. Oh hell yeah.
I'm
tough as nails. I will say one time in high school I got a concussion. And the student trainer put a towel over my eyes and began to take that freeze stuff that you spray on an
sure.
ankle to ice down an ankle immediately and began to freeze my head. And thank God the line coach looked over and goes, "What are you doing?" He was going to like freeze my forehead with this aerosol stuff because I couldn't remember, who we were playing.
I never had a concussion in high school. In college, two concussions that I had nothing to do with the hit. It had to do with the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, if you hit your head, that...
It's incredible it's the fall and the rubber snap of the neck.
Well,
I probably had
7 or 8.
It was the turf, and it was not the rubberized turf. It was the AstroTurf.
The AstroTurf. Like,
and when your head hit that, you might as well have been hitting the cement or the rug at your house. I mean, there was no give to it.
No, the first generation of AstroTurf was... deadly. And people just blow knees out all the time just making a cut.
Isn't that still what they have in Cincinnati? They still have AstroTurf?
I certainly hope not by now.
They could. They're tightwads.
They must be pretty tight if they're doing that. I came to Texas and that's what they had. They had AstroTurf. But I had just come from a place that had just a little bit of give. I mean, even at Boston College, it was very much the same when I was at BC than when I got to here. Dude, it was hard. It might have been, they had the track around the field here at the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
They might as well have the track on the inside as the football. I mean, that's how hard
it is. It's concrete under that turf.
Yeah.
I mean, still with the turf, even at Westlake, if you pulled up all that turf, it would just be concrete.
And of course, Monty, you worried more about the scrapes on your elbows that turned and got infected.
Oh, yeah.
Than actually the hits.
Staph infections.
Oh, a little bit of everything. All right, take a quick break, come back. We got to talk to Monty about what's going on in life with him, about the business. When we return, it's B&E. It is Buck Ons and Buck Offs.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Welcome back to B&E. E. Hogan taking a couple days, deserved days, of course. And he'll be back on Monday. And then I'll be out that door on after Tuesday for a couple days.
Golf?
Yeah.
Very good.
Golf, getting on the treadmill, doing some stuff around the house, which is not a new house, but every day it's new. I always talk, if you move into a new home, your operation of what you need to do around that house is a five-year plan. Someone said, well, are you going to be done in a year or so with gardening and stuff? No, I said, this is a five-year plan. This is not a one-year and done or 2 years. It's a five-year plan on when you can then sit back and check out everything that you've screwed up or redone like five times or you've tried. For me, gardening is experimental, Monty. I do a lot of stuff at The Natural Gardener because uh-huh. That used to be my neighbor. John Drumgle was my neighbor, so I learned a lot about plants and what you can do in this kind of soil here in the Austin area and what you have to do to build up gardens and things like that. But I also failed a lot. Spent a lot of money on stuff that just won't make it in Texas. No matter what you think or how pretty it is, and you see those kind of things at your Home Depots or Lowe's, and they look so pretty, and then when you stick them in the ground here, in this ground, dude, they ain't going to be around for much. Yeah. If you don't do the right things by fertilizing and making sure your beds or whatever it is, even if they're in pots, there's a certain heat that's here that will just overwhelm everything. And people say, no, I can make it grow. Well, I found the only thing that I truly can make come back every year that's not native to this soil here is Gerber daisies. I can make a Gerber daisy even after a freeze come back.
Listen to you. I don't even know what that is. I mean, I don't know.
It's a beautiful. It's my favorite flower. The Gerber
what is
daisy.
It? Gerber? Like Gerber daisy. Baby food?
Yeah, it's a big daisy. It looks like a daisy, but it has many different colors: red, pink,
really
green. I mean, it has it all. They're gorgeous, but. If you leave them, they'll wilt in the heat. Of course, the winter will get them. But they get to a certain time, I cut them back, and I put at least 3 to 4 inches of mulch over the top. And where you can't see them, in the winter, there's nothing to freeze. They're covered. They go in hibernation, and then they'll come back. They've seemed to work with the right kind of soil. But I try so many different things. Anything viney, with the exception of like a Carolina jasmine, but that's a hit or miss. You know the jasmine you see with the pretty, like they look like honeysuckles, and they have that wonderful smell.
Yeah,
that's a hit or miss plant. I mean, you can get a freeze and it will come back and smell beautiful in the spring, but there'll be a weird frost that all of a sudden you don't see. It dies. It dies out and never comes back.
No,
I spent a lot of money on that stuff.
We have Is it lantanas?
Lantanas come back. It's a weed. Lantanas a weed.
That's a weed.
Yeah, you know what? A knockout rose is a weed.
A knockout rose.
The knockout roses that you see all over that are beautiful. You can replant those 1,000. You can take them from one property to the next if you do it the right way. Stick it in the ground. It's just a big weed. You know, it's almost like a blackberry, like the blackberry bushes if you do them the right way.
Knockout rose and a Gerber daisy.
Gerber daisy, knockout roses. I've never been fond of knockout roses because I'm a real rose guy, the teacups, you know. The different types.
I got to get you over to. We're on the verge of doing landscaping. We lost all our trees over the period of about 10 years. Two or three of the trees were right across the street, our neighbor, but it blocked the morning sun.
Mm-hmm.
We had a giant magnolia which got some sort of disease and just dropped dead.
I just planted a magnolia, one of the big magnolia trees. I
got to get you over as a consultant. I'll pay a consultant fee.
There's a consultant fee. All right, we get back. We got to talk to Monty about some stuff when we return here. It's B&E, Buck Ons and Buck Offs on a Thursday.